Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back. It's Monday, the beginning of a new week. We've got lots of great shows planned for you all week. We're going to get underway with a really important show. During the first hour, we'll be talking with Dr. Paul Breslin. How does your mood, possibly a state of depression, being happy, being sad, how does that affect your perception of taste? And what does that mean? We're going to talk about that. Then we're going to switch it up. We're going to be joined by Judith McGeary, from Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance, to talk about the recent farm bill not passing and the implications on the Monsanto Protection Act. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that as well. So let's get right underway. We are starting a little late. Dr. Breslin, how are you, sir?
Hi, I'm well. How are you?
Good, good. All right, first of all, for the audience, describe how this study was designed. Then we can get into some of the more salient characteristics of it.
So the study was looking at the induction of moods, either happy or sad, in people who had been screened for having subclinical levels of anxiety or depression. So there are standard forms you can fill out, like a Beck depression inventory, to measure how depressed you are. Mm-hmm. And none of these people were clinically anxious or depressed. They were subclinically anxious or depressed. But we wanted to know what the induction of mood would do to their ability to perceive various oral stimuli, including a variety of tastes and some fat stimuli, creams, basically.
Okay. So you had two groups, right? You had a control and those who were subclinically depressed?
Right. So we can break people up into those who are subclinically depressed, into those that have higher subclinical depression scores and those who have lower subclinical depression scores. And the same for anxiety. And then they got to watch one of three movie clips to induce their mood. One was happy, one was very sad, and the other one was about copper smelting, which was the neutral one.
Yeah, right. No one has any opinion of that, right? unless your granddad died in a copper mine cave-in or something like that. But then again, that's going to be rare. So what did you find out?
Well, this is coming out of the context of prior studies showing that if you play with the pharmacology of how cells talk to each other, in particular how neurons talk to each other, these are systems that some people may know of as what we would either call noradrenaline or serotonin, that these are chemicals that cells normally use to communicate with each other, that you can give people drugs that interfere with this, and it affects their ability to taste. So in many cases, you can make the taste sensitivity go up. When the drug wears away, it returns back to normal. The same thing's true for people, say, who are depressed. People who are clinically depressed or anxious, their taste system will become stronger and will give stronger responses to a given stimulus. And when they recover from that, if you test them again, it's lower. So the induction of mood in this case, or the state in which they come into the study, we think of in the same way as a pharmacological manipulation of the person. And what we found was that by mood induction, we could replicate some of the work that had been done previously on this, either looking at people who are depressed or who had their pharmacology altered, and the tastes tend to get stronger. So things that are sweet seem sweeter, things that are bitter seem more bitter. But for the fat stimuli that we gave people, we actually surprisingly found something that went in the opposite direction, which is that when people who are subclinically depressed are given a mood-altering movie, not the boring one, but the other ones, what we found was that their ability to tell differences in fat level were greatly diminished. And these are fat levels in, say, a dairy that would be the difference between something like a skim milk and like half and half cream.
I was gonna
say, these are big differences. And they really couldn't tell them apart based on their ratings of how creamy it was.
Wow, that really is interesting because, you know, there are so many characteristics at play there. Viscosity alone, you would think, would be indicative of a thicker medium in the half and half, for instance, versus the skim milk. But they couldn't perceive that, huh?
They really couldn't tell them apart based on the ratings that they gave, as far as we could see. And we don't understand why this is happening in the opposite direction for the taste, but presumably the pharmacology, the neural systems are working in a way that's different than they do for taste. And we don't really know how people tell fats apart. We know that there's at least two systems involved in this. One is the way it feels in the mouth.
Right.
So if you put fat between your fingers and you rub your fingers together, you can feel that as slippery. The same is true for inside the mouth, so the way it feels. But we also think that it's involved in taste as well. So we know that there are fatty acid receptors in taste cells that may participate in this. And they may be wired or communicating in a way that's different from how taste works.
Now, when they watched a movie that made them sad versus watched a movie that made them happy, was happy, belly laughs, or were they just smiling? I mean, how did you rate the... The sad part is easy, right? But how do you rate happy?
So you just use a scale to determine what their mood is on basically it's a happy or sad scale.
Mm-hmm.
And the movie clips that we gave them was, I think the happy one was a scene from An Officer and a Gentleman where he goes into the factory to like pick up his girlfriend,
right,
and everyone's cheering for him.
Right.
And so that was like a happy moment. It wasn't a belly laugh moment.
Right.
Uplifting. Depending on how you feel about Richard Gere. But,
yeah.
And the other one was a boxing scene from A Champ where a guy gets his brains beaten out and his kid's watching his dad die, and it's a very sad scene. And if you ask people to rate whether they feel happy or sad after they watch these clips, the clips are very effective at getting them in the state you want them in.
You see, I always, when things like this occur and we have these discussions, I always start to think about evolution. I think, well, why is it that we can't tell the difference between a high fat and low fat? And keep in mind that, as you pointed out, mouthfeel is a great indicator of fat content. And that's why the food industry uses specific agents when they remove fat from a food that create that mouthfeel. But I always think of things on an evolutionary scale, and I think, well, what is it when we are not in that neutral zone that makes our body indiscriminate to how much fat we're eating? Because there's a reason for it. Our body responds that way for a reason. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I don't really know the answer to it, but it's an interesting question. Depression and anxiety are, to some degree, we believe, causally independent, although they tend to very strongly co-occur. So there's
okay.
a strong comorbidity, as you would say, between being anxious and being depressed. And we know that sensations in general, when people are in these kinds of states, tends to be perceived as stronger. So lights seem brighter, sounds seem louder, and as it turns out, taste seems stronger. We understand the pharmacology of that, and we understand that these sensory systems tend to be processed in a similar way in that regard. Why fats are going in the opposite direction in terms of our giving similar ratings to something that's low fat and something that's considerably higher fat, I don't know. But there's definitely an interplay between going in the opposite direction as opposed to asking how does changing your mood affect your ability to taste fats. We understand that the diet can affect your mood.
Right.
So there's sort of two ways of thinking
and
about
it. That's what I was thinking of. What I was thinking was this. There's a large body of evidence out there now that fats can affect mood, as you point out. And some fats can make you have bad moods. Higher omega-6 diets we now attribute to people have dramatic mood swings and perhaps some other problems socially. And we know that there's a large body of evidence out there now that the omega-3s seem to have the ability to have a calming effect and even are being compared to some antidepressant drugs now. And so maybe, just maybe, and again, I have no research background in this at all, but maybe the body, because fat also reaches a satiety level much faster. So maybe the body goes, look, we don't want to shut off eating fat right now because we are not in a emotionally homeostatic place. We need fat. The brain needs fat right now. So let's not have this person discriminate against fat, because in a normal situation, they may stop eating sooner than we need them to. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I think that's an interesting hypothesis. So as you pointed out, the diet can affect mood. And there are, in fact, a whole category of foods that we colloquially describe as comfort foods,
mm-hmm.
Usually high carbohydrate, high fat foods. So like macaroni and cheese is a classic.
Yeah,
chicken
yeah.
soup is one.
Yeah.
Some restaurants even specialize in comfort food. And in fact, some researchers even go so far as to say as these foods that we might traditionally think of as not being particularly healthy because they're high carb, high fat, actually are healthy because they're stress reducing.
Uh-huh.
And we know that having low stress is in fact very good for you. So a little bit of comfort food now and then maybe isn't such a bad idea if it helps your overall mood profile.
Right.
So you're suggesting that these yin and yang of mood affecting your ability to perceive fat and your ingestion of fat being able to affect your mood are sort of going round and round, and maybe what's happening is the body's telling you, I want you to self-medicate now.
Yes.
Those are your words, not mine, but I think that's a perfectly interesting hypothesis.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to pick it up. We're talking with Dr. Paul Breslin from Rutgers University. We're talking about how mood affects your sense of perception, taste, when it comes to fats. Very, very interesting discussion. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money. Wherever you call your battlefield after each training engagement, you must recover. Introducing the most complete all-natural and organic recovery formula, AmNutrition's Basic Training, formulated by a military veteran. Basic Training provides the ammunition your body needs to recover and continue the fight. No fake sugar or flavors. No GMOs. Less than 1 milligram of sugar and soy per serving, with complete nutrition no other company provides. Arm yourself with the healthiest recovery formula on the market. The body's ammunition. And nutrition. Join the nutritional revolution by going to muscleandnutrition.com. That's muscle, AmNutrition.com.
Recover!
And nutrition. Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's SUPER. Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a 1-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding. Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking right now with Dr. Paul Breslin from Rutgers University about the ability to perceive fat depending on mood. You know what's really interesting? I had to look back, Dr. Breslin, because on Tuesday of last week, I did a show with Drs. Charles Raison and Dr. Andrew Miller. Do you know of their work, Malaise, Melancholia, and Madness, The Evolutionary Legacy of Inflammatory Bias?
No, I don't.
It's an interesting perspective on depression and mood and the linkage to inflammation, and what they found out and what we discussed in that particular interview was the possible mechanism of omega-3 fatty acids in their ability to modulate depression. And I guess coming back to what I said earlier, that maybe the body shuts off its awareness of fat because it knows it wants fat. So that's a whole other discussion, but I just wanted to point that out. We did talk about that. It's intriguing research there. What I want to move to now is a discussion on what does this mean in the context of today's obesogenic environment. We obviously realize that the argument about fat being good or fat being bad is negated when we realize that its caloric content is twice that of carbohydrates and proteins. And so not being able to, say, get full on fat is a detriment, is it not?
Well, you raised before the question of what might be an evolutionary mechanism for this and how it might be beneficial to you, which I think is an interesting perspective. But, of course, a lot of evolutionary mechanisms have kind of gone awry today because we live in a sort of hyper-food-saturated world.
Right.
So the sort of mechanisms we involved, we evolved to forage for food and find food and to eat it when it's available is not necessarily a good strategy to follow when there are cookies and donuts on every corner. And in this particular case, what we know is that when people have a tendency to be overweight or obese, that can actually influence their mood and affect. So people will have a tendency to be more depressed when they are heavier, whether they're pharmacological or societal or whether those are intertwined with each other. Bases is a complicated question. But if you have a situation where a person may not be able to distinguish different fat levels in a food and may inadvertently be eating more fat than they ought to be eating, that can have a tendency to make them heavier. So if they're already in a situation where they're overweight, saying they have a body mass index of, say, 25 or higher, and their mood is not optimal, then seeing something that's going to stimulate them, like a happy or a sad movie clip, may make their body more prone to eat more fat because they're not distinguishing what's high fat from low fat.
Right.
If that tends to make their BMI go higher, that may make things worse. And so in our society, you might have a tendency for affect or depression to go higher in these people along with their body mass index, and this would be sort of a positively cycling problem.
You know, it'd be interesting to see the I'm trying to think through this. You know, movie theaters, they have both happy and sad movies, and it'd be interesting to see how many people come back for a second order of popcorn drenched in that disgusting oil that they put on it to make it taste like butter, you know, because they just can't get their fill of it, so to speak. But, you know, This is
well, what you bring up also is sort of intersecting with a problem that that everybody has, which is what's referred to as mindless eating, which is when there's a bucket of popcorn next to you and your attention is grasped by a screen somewhere else. You may just reach for whatever's there and eat it without thinking about it, regardless of what else is going on.
So where do you go next with this research? Do you have something else that you're already working on that kind of dovetails from this?
Well, I think that it's a really interesting question. How does fat taste work? It seems to be operating in a way that is somewhat different from how sweet, sour, bitter, salty, and maybe umami taste operate. And we really don't know that much about it. Traditionally, we've always thought of it as a texture, that we discriminate by what we would say how creamy it feels. Mm-hmm. It's a mouthfeel, a mouth coating phenomenon. But it seems to be more than that. There now is evidence that there are various fat receptors or fat transporters in taste cells, and this has been found even in humans, that when there – actually, studies have been done recently that show that when there are mutations in some of these fat transporters in taste cells, that it affects people's ability to detect fatty acids in foods. And so we don't know why they're there, because when you give these stimuli to people – and ask them consciously, what do you perceive? What do you taste in the mouth? They don't really have a word to use to describe what the sensation is. Like, we call sugar sweet, and we call quinine bitter, and we call sodium chloride salty. What do you call this fatty acid sensation in the mouth? They know it's there, but it's really hard to explain.
Warm.
It mostly seems bitter or irritating when you put fatty acids in the mouth. There isn't some like obvious quality that you get out of it.
Right.
So it could be that they're there to act on maybe unconscious processing systems of reward. And mm-hmm. there's now a fair amount of evidence to suggest, for a variety of different kinds of stimuli that go in the mouth, things that are both appetitive and aversive, either sugars or toxins, things that taste bitter, that we process them both consciously in how we perceive them, but we also process them unconsciously, in that they can affect our metabolism, our ability to process nutrients or toxins coming in, and they act in the brain to affect reward systems. And it could be that these fatty acid systems are part of that sort of unconscious processing of nutrients coming in.
You know, it's also interesting, and I've never really done any research to find out if this is true, but I had someone once say on my show that you'll never find high amounts of fat in sweets that occur naturally in nature. And I've never really, we were talking about fruit at the time, and I thought, well, bananas have a little fat, I think, and he said, well, it's very, very small amount of fat. And, you know, it's interesting because we usually get fat with protein. If we look at, you know, if we go back to ancestral ways before, modernization and industrialization and agricultural phenomenons, you know, occurring and so on. I wonder if there's, that's part of it as well, because fats generally didn't occur juxtaposed to sweets, so to speak. Any information on that before we close the interview?
Well, I think that's a really insightful comment when we last shared common ancestors with the other apes, we lived in tropical forests and probably largely ate fruit and young leaves to get all of our carbs and protein. And it probably wasn't a particularly high-fat diet of any sort. And as we moved out of the tropical environment to the savanna and started to eat meats, we would be getting fats in the form of animal products mixed with protein, but not with carbohydrates. And although we were clearly eating carbohydrates in a variety of forms, probably we've been eating some kind of grain and bread-like substance for a very long time.
Right.
It was probably rare that we would eat these things together. So we were eating them, but probably they would have made up separate meals. Whereas today, we put them together in a single mouthful. So
right.
We have a sandwich, a hamburger, spaghetti and meatballs, sushi. And it's probably something that we would have rarely experienced in our history or in our evolution. So we are favoring a way of eating now that I think is fairly novel and probably not very healthy.
Well, and you know what it is going to do, obviously, because we're not done evolving. So obviously, you know, 200 years from now, this food combining, which I've done shows on this years ago, when I started talking about paleo dieting back in 2005. And back then, we actually did a show about polyphasic diets with Dr. Mauro DiPasquale. We talked about, you know, seasonality of things. They were available for a while. They weren't available for a while. You know, we didn't we didn't find an animal or kill an animal and then go, you know what would really taste good with this elk? Some broccoli. Go out and get some broccoli. No, you ate that animal until you couldn't eat anymore, and then you moved on. And then when you moved on, if you didn't have any animal protein and fat to eat, maybe you found a field full of something edible, and then you ate that for as long as you could, and then you moved on. So this whole food combining thing that has occurred with the gastronomy phenomenon is going to have some sort of evolutionary impact on how our body relates. Somebody's going to be doing a study 200 years ago from now going, hey, you know, when you isolate and eat fat by itself without sweets, this happens. And it's going to be like the reverse of what you're studying now. You know what I mean? So,
well, I think there are many ways of understanding the term paleo diet, but I actually believe what you say is probably fairly close to the way we would have eaten, and the sort of modern day argument to how mixing these kinds of foods that maybe didn't go together historically or evolutionarily is that my understanding is the number one food that sumo wrestlers eat in order to have the strength and mass and girth that they have is sushi. They're mixing high quality protein with a lot of carbohydrates simultaneously in every bite they eat, and that's how they get where they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And me, see, I'm a sashimi guy, by the way. I don't even like sushi anymore because I don't want all that rice. As I just turned 55, and high carbs just doesn't work for me, especially high glycemic load type carbs. But I could eat sashimi all day long if I could afford to, by the way, because it's so damn expensive. But I've often thought about just getting a whole side of salmon and just eating sashimi all day long. That works well for me. But listen, Dr. Breslin, I want to thank you for taking the time to come on the show today. I believe that your research is very, very important, and I hope that as future research comes about that you'll consider coming back on the show.
It was my pleasure, and I'd be happy to.
Okay, take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to be joined by Judith McGeary, one of the people that keeps me from going too far off the deep end when we talk about agricultural issues. And we're going to talk about the current farm bill not passing, its impact on the Monsanto Protection Act, and other details like that. So stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
No other peptide supplier has a more complete offering than Southern Research Companies. And no other peptide supplier can boast that all their research peptides are manufactured inside the United States in Tier 1 labs. Whether you're looking for IGF-1 Long R3, GHRP6, GHRP2, Melanotan 2, Mechanogrowth Growth Factor, or PT-141, or hard-to-find peptides like triptorelin or follistatin, you'll find them at Southern Research Companies. Free shipping on orders over $150. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Southern Research banner ad today and do business with the most trusted name in research peptides, Southern Research Company.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block block barbells that turn your power block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert power block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com for a free brochure.
Could Altrian supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrian C and Altrian ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrian C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrian ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrian cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888-437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
New from Rob Ragish, author of The Blueprint and SHR's own Blueprint Power Hour, comes The Blueprint Bulletin. Every month, Rob delivers the absolute latest and greatest information right to your inbox. Everything's on the table, including training, diet, supplementation, gray market products, and more. This is a fantastic way to stay one step ahead of your competition and use these secrets to up your game. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com or click the Blueprint Bulletin banner ad on superhumanradio.com to get your free introductory issue. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com today.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay. So every time I start acting like Glenn Beck when we talk about a political issue related to health and nutrition and so on, Judith McGeary comes on and puts a lasso around me and pulls me back into reality. How you doing, Judith?
I'm doing great. Thank you, Carl.
Also the person that I can thank for introducing me to Howard Vlieger, actually.
He's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah, he really is. He's single-handedly fighting the genetically modified food industries and organizations. Every day now I get emails from him with great information. And that study that he just performed with Dr. Carmen over in Australia was profound.
So. It's, you know, I'm so glad that study finally got published. Howard's been talking about it literally for years. And we've all been, you know, it's so hard to get research that is critical of GMOs published.
Yes. And we talked, and actually, the day after he did the show about the research, I re-aired the original interview from 2008 when we talked all about that. We talked about the stomach linings of these pigs as they were being processed, the GERD-like symptoms, the reduced frequency and litter numbers of their reproductive cycles. I mean, all that stuff was back in 2008, and it was like, and I re-aired that. I was like, here's the original interview that now is a published study. This is amazing. So anyway. Okay, so a lot of people out there are applauding because they believe that the Monsanto Protection Act has been derailed because the farm bill has been derailed. And I called you and said, you know, Judith, you're my go-to source for the real facts in this, because Judith, unlike many other people, is not a zealot. She really is all about working hard for the farming community, and you can't be a zealot if you're taken seriously up on Capitol Hill, just for the record. That's why I couldn't do it, and she has to do this sort of stuff. But she said, Carl, I don't even like the name, the Monsanto Protection Act. So first of all, tell me why.
The Monsanto Protection Act, I mean, the advantage of that name, I'll give it, is it got a huge amount of attention.
Yes.
And got people aware. But it makes people, I mean, if I hear that term, I think that there is a bill out there, you know, a law that simply says, you know, you can't sue Monsanto or, you know, and biotech companies, you know, for their GMOs. And that's really how it's been portrayed to a lot of people, and that's not the case. What it was is it was a little tiny rider, which is a rider, is this a
addendum,
substantive,
yeah,
policy provision,
right,
that stuck onto an unrelated bill.
Right.
And so they stuck it onto the budget bill. It's called the Continuing Resolution. It's what funds our federal government.
Right.
And it's a really bad provision, and what it does is it does prevent people, what it does is it requires actually USDA to approve Monsanto's and other biotech companies, any genetically engineered seeds for planting, if a farmer requests the seed.
Right.
So it's a really bad provision, but first of all, it was unreasonable to ask Obama to veto it, because it would have meant shutting down the federal government, folks.
Right.
You know, as much as I hate GMOs, it's kind of hard to ask Obama to veto something that's going to shut the federal government down. And it dies when the budget dies. So when the budget bill is only good through the end of September. So the, you know, the Monsanto Protection Act becomes defunct, becomes dies at the end of September.
Anyway, no matter what.
No matter what. No matter what. Farm bill, no farm bill, whatever. Now, we have a fight, and it's important to keep an eye on it because it can come back.
Right.
And that would be really bad. We don't want it coming back. So it's an important issue. We kept calling it the biotech rider.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's about all the biotech seeds, and we have to fight it along with fighting a lot of bad GMO policy.
Okay.
But the farm bill dying isn't really all that relevant to it.
It didn't even matter. So everybody's applauding that the farm bill died because they think that the Monsanto Protection Act, which shouldn't be called that. What would you call the rider if you were not trying? And I understand why people do this. Look, in order to get attention to your cause and the noise level of the media today, you've got to say some outlandish things to get people to go, well, what? What's that about? And so I understand why they do these kind of things, but what would you have called this Monsanto Protection Act instead?
We called it a very boring name. We called it the biotech rider.
That's it. Yeah.
You know, and it's boring. And like you said, I do understand, and I'm very glad that it got a lot of people's attention. I mean, I am grateful for that. We just need now for people to understand, unfortunately, the complexity of the issue. It's, you know, now that we've gotten people's attention, can we get them to take that extra baby step and start recognizing how complex the issues are and really fighting them in a way that's effective and that will get us the results we need?
Okay. Now, what about the failure of the farm bill? You know, the farm bill failed because of food stamps, which is another unfortunate situation. When the food stamp program was created, it was created not for economically challenged people in the inner cities. It was created so that farmers could sell their products competitively against the big department stores and so on that were emerging back then, the larger chains and that were emerging back then, to the people in the inner city. The food stamps was created for the farming community, not for the economically challenged, just so people understand that. And as a result, it's part of the USDA's bailiwick and not some other social program, you know, that the government has for the underprivileged and socioeconomically challenged people in this country. So the farm bill gets shut down because of food stamps. Was the farm bill potentially, were there any things in there that would have helped the small family farm, or are we glad that it got shut down regardless of the reason?
You know, this is one of the areas that's really complicated. I can't say there wasn't a lot of good in it. I mean, it was a pretty bad bill. On the other hand, the existing farm bill programs that basically it looks like they'll probably just have to do a continuation of are probably even worse.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not turning handstands, although I didn't like the bill and there was a lot bad. There was one provision in there that we got in on the house, in the House before the whole thing got shot down, that was very important, and we are going to have to fight for it in other forums. I mean, basically, since the farm bill died, we'll work on it through, you know, other bills. But it was an amendment by a congressman from Michigan, Congressman Benishek, to require the Food and Drug Administration to do a scientific and cost analysis of its proposed food safety rule.
Ah.
Which, by the way, FDA was supposed to do to begin with. They were supposed to do it before they issued the proposal, and they didn't.
Really?
More to the point, they did a really bad job of it.
Oh, man.
And the rules they've proposed are a disaster. I mean, truly. And I do try to avoid going, you know, extremist, as you pointed out at the beginning.
Right,
but
right.
This is their food safety rules are a disaster. They're going to be incredibly destructive for sustainable farmers, small-scale farmers. We had gotten an exemption in to the statute for many small-scale farmers, and FDA has done a pretty impressive job at gutting it in the rules. And so Banaschek's amendment is an incredibly important one, and we're going to have to work to get that passed elsewhere. But it's very exciting that it got passed to begin with, that
right.
there was enough support in the House of Representatives to attach it to the Farm Bill. So that's a very positive development, and now we just need to keep working it.
Okay, here's what I want to do. I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we've got lots more questions. We're talking with Judith McGeary this half hour. She is the founder of Farm and Ranch Freedom Alliance, which is FARFA, which is for farmers and people who do business with farmers in this country. You can go to the website farmandranchfreedom.org to learn more. By the way, sign up for the newsletter, because a lot of the things that we talk about on this show, you can learn firsthand right from Judith when there's time to take action. That's where I take action. I take my action at farmandranchfreedom.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein in the world. Not only is it from Amish grass-fed cows inside the United States, but it's the only grass-fed whey in the world that is not heat pasteurized. Don't be fooled by other grass-fed whey products that are low heat pasteurized. Only the patented Chill-Rite process leaves all the natural fractions of whey intact to boost your immune system while building more muscle. And Whey Natural USA is also the lowest price for non-heat pasteurized grass-fed whey protein in the world. Don't waste your time on products that only deliver 15 grams of protein per scoop. Choose the best with 25 grams of protein per scoop. Whey Natural USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today to see why anything less is wasting your money.
Could Altrian supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrian C and Altrian ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrian C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrian ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrian cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888-437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Judith McGeary, from Farm and Ranch Freedom. Farmandranchfreedom.org. Okay, so, Judith, let's talk about Monsanto just for a second. Monsanto continues to pioneer newer GM crops. I know that on your website, there was a person, I'm trying to think of the name, Mark Linus, who,
yes,
criticized this study by basically saying that that the study shouldn't be trusted because it was written by GM activists, people who were just opposed to GM crops and at any for any reason at all, and so their research shouldn't be trusted. And I'd like to ask you a question. Okay? Whose research would you trust? A group who stands to profit from the process, or a group that does not stand to profit from the process?
Yeah, I mean, that criticism is pretty amazing on a lot of fronts. I mean, first of all, I also want to say, you know, Dr. Carmen, Howard Vlieger, a lot of people like them, myself, didn't come into this argument with some ideological belief against GMO.
Right.
Howard grew GMOs on his property back in the early 90s or mid-90s.
Right.
You know, I come from a biology background. You know, at one point I ran experiments, you know, one summer when I was working in a lab where we, you know, did some little bit, you know, genetic engineering on bacteria, you know. I'm not anti-technology. I became convinced that GMO technology is bad for us because of the evidence. So, you know, the idea that somehow research that is done by people who looked at the evidence and have raised concerns about GMOs because of the evidence is really pretty spectacular. And then you get to the point that you raised, which is, why aren't people like Mark Linus screaming about all the studies that are funded by Monsanto and DuPont and Syngenta?
Bingo.
You know, that supposedly show that they're safe.
You know, the standard of practice today in research is that researchers have to openly disclose if they are in any way, shape, or form, what's the word I'm looking for? Not corrupted, but affiliated with the industry or the companies or the products that they are researching.
I was going to say, it's not completely that clear cut.
Right.
You have to say who's funding that study.
Right.
So if you got specific funding for that study from, you know, Corporation X, you have to say it. But what about all of the funding and the general grant money that comes in and the endowed chairs and the we're going to build buildings?
Well, and then,
and,
but
we may not fund this program,
but
another one.
But let me go another way with it, okay? So look.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so I'm a researcher, right? And I want funding because that's how I do research, right? So I have a wide variety of things I could do research on. So I go out there and I look for where there is money. And I find out there is money to research the efficacy of genetically modified crops. And so I stylist. So in other words, I guess the point I'm trying to make is you don't have to be affiliated or working for the industry or the company, but because it's kind of like a reverse, so you don't say, oh, I'm going to go out there and do research to find out if GMO crops are safe or not. Okay? And then you go look for money. A lot of these researchers, they look to see where the money is, and then they go, oh, we could do research in this here because we need to get funding. We need our lab to be actively involved in research at all times. So there's other ways to kind of be quote-unquote corrupted. If you're getting dollars to do research that has specific endpoints, and that's how you're getting the dollars, that's the research you have to do. And you know what's proof of this? The NIH funds research. 70% of the research it funds never gets published. Why doesn't it get published? Is it because it's bad research, or is it because it didn't meet the endpoints that they were looking for? I think it's the latter.
You know, there's a lot of truth to that. Now, this is an example not from the biotech industry, but just an example of how much power the chemical companies have on research. I remember speaking with a friend of mine who did a master's at what's called one of the agricultural land grant universities. And these are the universities that do almost all of the agricultural research.
Because they have free land. They have to do it. And they have to do, they can't piss in the Cheerios, so to speak. They'll get the land taken away.
Well, the land can't get taken away from them. The land is grants from the government, and it's already set. But you still need funding. You know, you can have all the land you want, but if you don't have funding for research, it doesn't go far. So she was doing her master's in agriculture, and was doing research on different herbicides, you know, for corn, and went back to her, you know, the professor in charge of her lab, and was like, none of these really work very well. You know, the bottom line is they all pretty much are lousy and
right.
aren't really helping. And his response was, you cannot write it up like that. You can't do it, because if you write up something that says that, the funding for my entire lab becomes at risk.
Yeah.
Do whatever you need to do with the statistical analysis, but one of those is going to be shown to be statistically, you know, a positive thing.
Right, right. I mean, it's shocking. And so I come back to Mark Linus's comment. Who would I trust? I would trust research coming from individuals and organizations that do not profit from their research. Okay? I would not use research that is designed to promote and profit from the research, which is what the pro-GMO stuff is. What about there's a study, I'm trying to get this Dr. Henneman on. Have you seen the research already? That's GM crops are not sustainable at all when they were really looked at using the same metrics as conventional crops?
I saw a reference, but I haven't had a chance to dig into it. It looks fascinating. And it matches what we're hearing from the farmers. So I'm very interested to see that.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I read one time, probably a year or so ago, that number one, the bushel per acre yield on genetically modified crops is just slightly higher than non-genetically modified crops in soybeans and corn. Is there any truth to that?
And again, I haven't done the crunching that needs to be crunched on this, but my understanding in talking to farmers is it depends on the conditions. There are times and conditions where you will see some, you know, improvement in yield, and there are other times and conditions where you won't see any improvement or you'll even see a decrease. What we've already seen, pulling away from biotech for a moment and just looking at conventional, for instance, versus sustainable or biological methods,
right,
is when everything goes right, you know, you have good rainfall, you have sort of good temperature patterns, you know, things work, you know, you have lots of inputs that you can afford to throw at it, conventional will outperform sustainable.
Right.
But there aren't a whole lot of years and situations where all of those factors are true.
Right.
And if you look at situations where, for instance, you've had some drought conditions or you've had some slightly too wet conditions or you've had, you know, all of these situations that happen in agriculture, you know, overall, sustainable will outperform, will out-yield conventional.
More the norm. That's more the norm, that you don't have all the conditions pointing in the right direction.
Exactly. And it seems to be, you know, what I'm hearing from people, and I haven't crunched the numbers, I really want to go look at that study, is that really sort of GMOs takes that to yet another level again. You know, if things go right, you know, the GMO can outperform the others. But that's not the norm.
Right. Well, the other thing that I've read is, other than the crop yield, is the actual cost of production. That the fallacy is that it's less expensive to grow genetically modified crops, when in fact it is more expensive. That, number one, you have to buy very expensive seeds. Number two, because you can't reuse seeds in GM, so you got to buy every season. You got to buy seeds, and the actual applications of Roundup are more expensive because you have to literally drown the crop in it. And the illusion that you use less is really just that—an illusion. Do you have any information on that?
Again, and actually Howard has wonderful numbers on this sort of thing, which I don't have my fingertips. But again, it's one of those things, if you think about maybe a first generation GMO crop where the weeds, you know, you've got some nice virgin land, you know, land that's, you know, hasn't been used for this before and you plant it, quite possibly that year, even with the tech fees, your cost might be lower. But the weeds develop resistance to the herbicides.
Right.
And every year you're pouring more and more herbicides, and you pour not just now Roundup, but you start having to do mixes. So, for instance, there are a slew of applications into USDA from the biotech industry to approve what's called stack traits. So the plants are resistant to Roundup and 2,4-D and dicamba.
Right.
Because let's create the most toxic cocktail we can imagine
right.
to start dousing our fields with.
And never mind that, there's always residual amounts of this stuff in the flesh of the fruit and produce and on the skin of the fruit and produce. So those people out there who continue to eat conventionally grown produce and fruit, and especially genetically modified variants, I ask you this. If I came to your home with a small bottle of 2,4-D and an eyedropper and said, I'm going to come by once a week, I want to put one drop on your tongue, your children's tongue, your husband's tongue, and I'm going to do this for the next couple months, would you let me do that? And I know the answer is no. You say, Carl, that's the stupidest thing in the mind. But what are you doing cumulatively when you eat produce and fruit that has been sprayed with these toxic chemicals? There is some residual amount in the flesh of the fruit and the produce and on the skin of the fruit and the produce. You're not getting it all out. You are essentially doing something that's tantamount to putting a small drop of these toxic chemicals on your tongue and your children's tongue every week. Do you think that's and I know I'm a zealot, so I'm asking you to rein me back in. So do you think that's a true statement?
I actually have to side with you on this one.
Okay.
I mean, the amounts vary. We don't know exactly. I mean, I can give you all sorts of caveats, but ultimately, yes, you are ingesting stuff that's toxic. And what's really scary about these new crops that have not yet been approved, and we're fighting the approval, we're trying to stop them, that, for instance, would approve crops that are resistant to 2,4-D, which is one of the major pieces of Agent Orange.
Right.
Is 2,4-D volatilizes. That means it turns into a gas very easily, and it travels miles away from where it's been applied. So if these crops are approved and they start spraying, and 2,4-D is used in very small quantities already, you know, they're conventional agriculture, but it's used in very small quantities. And our experience is if you create a herbicide-resistant GMO crop, the quantity of that herbicide
increases.
Goes up significantly.
Right,
you know,
right.
Dramatically.
Right.
So we'll go from having, you know, a little tiny bit of 2,4-D being used in agriculture to a lot of 2,4-D, and it volatilizes, and it spreads, and it means even if you're eating organic, even if you are, you know, in a city, but, you know, you live within a few miles of agricultural area where they're growing these crops, you will be exposed to 2,4-D. And it'll be a small amount. You know, it's not, you know, you're not going to drop dead on the spot.
Right.
But, I mean, how does this make sense? How does it make sense to keep putting out there more and more and more of these toxins and in a way that people will not be able to avoid?
You know, a study that we talked about the other day and I posted on my blog where glyphosate was implicated in causing human breast cancer cells to grow even in the absence of estrogen because it activates the estrogen receptor is worrisome. But then you say to yourself, well, I live in the city. I don't have to worry about this. And I buy organic. So I'm not doing what Carl said. I'm not putting a dropper full of it on my tongue once a week on my children's. Okay. Well, guess what? A study done in Germany where they tested the urine in 18 major European cities, in the cities, that high levels of glyphosate in the urine of people who they were completely blindsided by this research because they assumed that it wouldn't be. Where is it coming from, they said? Where is it? You know what? It could be what Judith is talking about. They're spraying it in fields miles and miles and miles away, but this particulate matter gets picked up, goes up, rains down on populations. You get exposed to it anyway. This is not a long game, folks. This is a short game. What's being done with pesticides today is going to be a short game. It's going to cause disease. It's already causing disease. We know that it has transgenerational epigenetic effects. Something must be done. See, I said this before. Politicians, they're not thinking right. Hey, if we kill the population, we have no tax dollars anymore. They're not thinking right. Okay? So we can't wait for them to legislate and control this. We must vote with our dollars. You must buy organic, regardless of whether you think you can afford it or not. You need to, because we need to send the message to all those that grow food that we don't want conventional, and then things will change.
Oh. Absolutely. You have to, I mean, it's a two-pronged fight. One is buying good quality food for yourself, you know, buying organic, buying local, buying from, you know, grass-fed meats and all of that. And the other part is making the change at the societal and political levels because it's, you know, you're affected by everything around you and we have to make change on that scale. And that's things like, you know, fighting, you know, there were provisions that were introduced to the Farm Bill that didn't pass or didn't get voted on that, you know, would have required labeling of GMOs, that would have stopped GMO salmon, that would have, you know, done studies. I mean, so we need to fight for provisions like that. We need to fight for GMO labeling. We need to fight for, you know, stopping these new approvals. Let's not keep approving crop after crop with 2,4-D and dicamba resistance. That we need both pieces of the fight. We need people involved in both pieces.
What do you know about Vermont? I heard that Vermont approved the labeling of genetically modified foods. Is that true?
Not Vermont. So Connecticut, Vermont's bill is still Connecticut. Yeah, but Vermont's bill is still alive. I don't want to imply Vermont's bill is alive and kicking. Connecticut and Maine both passed mandatory labeling bills. Except, unfortunately, they include a trigger. I mean, so it's great. We have, you know, it's a step forward, but neither goes into effect until a certain number of other states adopt the same law. I believe in Vermont it's 4 states, in Maine it's actually 5. So they're on the books, they've got the law in place, and now it's, you know, the fight moves to another state, and the question becomes, can we get enough states? And they need to be states in the Northeast. Can we get enough states in the Northeast to pass the same provisions, the same core provisions?
I hope so.
In order to trigger those.
There are a lot
of good folks working on that.
Judith McGeary came on the show today with very little notice because we had a guest drop out, and she hasn't been feeling well, so the Superhuman Nation sends her some good vibes. She works very, very hard. Tirelessly is a underused word when we talk about Judith McGeary. She's always fighting for the rights of not only the family farmers, but the people that they supply with health-giving food. Go to farmandranchfreedom.org today. Sign up for the newsletters. There's good information about raw milk there, about animal ID, about genetically modified foods, about farm issues and so on, and always ways that you can take action quickly. So that, because everybody's busy. I know what this is like. You know, it's like, oh, one more thing. I don't have time to call my state senator. Well, okay, if you don't have time to do that, then at least go to farmandranchfreedom.org, sign up for the newsletters, and whenever you get one, click the link and put your name on a list. Then at least you're doing the minimum to protect your family and future generations of your family from what would be a serious disaster as our food chain becomes compromised. Judith, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me on,
okay,
Carl. It's always a pleasure.
Talk to you later. All right, so stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Pay attention, boy. Little mama, show me how you move it. Your hips push back into a flip. Bring it in, nothing to it. Shake.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3444. 8473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit ironmaglabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinus Stain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at ironmaglabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Tomorrow never comes until it's too late.
Welcome back. We've got some really good shows this week I want to talk about real quick. On Wednesday, we're being joined by Paul Zak. Some of you may have heard of him or have seen his TED talk on the morality molecule, which is the source of love and prosperity. We're going to be talking about that, the hormone that seems to be linked to moral judgment and happiness. Also, tomorrow, after the Blueprint Power Hour, we'll be talking about the linkage between male menopause and heart failure. Constantly we see especially recently, we see a lot of, so-called, scientists and doctors and those within the medical orthodoxy coming out and saying, you know, testosterone supplementation is the wrong thing to do for men. It doesn't provide any benefits. In fact, it's even dangerous, and nothing could be further from the truth. Again, you just need to use critical thinking skills. You know, you had testosterone levels as a man. As a young man, very high levels. As a woman, you had estrogen, testosterone, progesterone levels at youthful levels. As a young woman, you get old, they drop, you get tired, you start aging. You keep them at youthful levels. You stop aging. We're going to be talking about that, especially in women, very shortly as well. We've got another interview we're lining up about HRT in women and its effect on skeletal muscular conditions. Soft tissue and ligament repair and so on. This is profound stuff. You gotta be careful when the mainstream starts banging that drum that, testosterone is dangerous. You have to ask yourself, where is that coming from? When the overwhelming research shows, that clearly youthful levels of testosterone, I'm not talking about anabolic steroid use type levels. We're talking about keeping your testosterone levels in that 700 to 1500 nanogram range actually has a lot of health benefits. You have to ask yourself, why are they saying this? Who stands to lose? If you don't develop depression, diabetes, dyslipidemia, heart failure, and all these other diseases, if you don't get those because you take testosterone, who stands to lose? The companies that would sell you the 7 or 8 medications that you would normally be taking till the day that you die. You know, to go full circle to what we talk about with Judith McGeary, you have to ask yourself, when the research is coming from within the organizations to support the agenda that seems to be the profitable one that is clearly not working, by the way, okay? 50% of Americans on pharmaceutical drugs today, and we are sicker than ever. Clearly, they're not working. Again, I'm not lying about this. I don't need a report. Critical thinking skills that work here. That's it. So we'll be talking about the linkage between testosterone and heart failure. We also will be doing a show about estrogen levels and skeletal, muscular, and neurological disorders. These are all important subjects because right now there is a war on to confuse you and make you afraid. Non-obese women should always be thinking about hormone replacement therapy as they start to near menopause. Don't let the hormone levels drop, and you don't go through menopause. You just continue on feeling good, living an active life. And men need to consider this as well. We don't have the abrupt cessation like a woman has. She stops having her period. She knows she's gone through menopause. Men, it just gets slower and lower. Your energy levels drop. You get grouchy, grumpy. You start developing diseases. We have to be even more vigilant to keep an eye on it because the signs and symptoms are much harder to discern. And so I say, you know, if you see that your testosterone levels are dropping when you turn 40, they're starting to get into the lower ranges or the middle ranges, you need to start considering testosterone therapy. So we'll talk about that tomorrow. I just want to thank everybody for listening. Also, don't forget, we've got Superhuman Radio removable bumper stickers. You can get them on the Superhuman Radio website. $1 for two includes postage to get it to you inside the United States, and it's $1.64 outside the United States for two of them. They do not have gobs of adhesive on them, so they won't rip your paint off or mark up your car. You can literally pull them right off, but the one thing you have to do is wash the surface before you put them on because they don't have any of that really, really powerful adhesive. Otherwise, they will start to peel probably within a month or two of putting it on. You wash the surface, you put it on, and they'll stay there. Show your love. Spread the word of the Superhuman Nation. Okay, we'll see you tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio. Thanks for listening.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.